There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Welcome to Drive Live. It's 20 past six, and we were talking a few minutes ago about shark conservation, weren't we, Danny?
You
did a nice
interview
before. And it was kind of advice and some of the organisations' work that they're doing here in the UAE to protect and look at the numbers of sharks in the region.
Yeah, because you'd be surprised at how many sharks actually are in the waters around the UAE, but unfortunately quite a few of them are, well, they're at risk, really. They're at risk of extinction and certainly of a major depletion in the area.
Okay, so Adil texts in and says, does the same apply to loan sharks? Which, you know, Adil, that was a joke worthy of Tim's dad jokes, actually.
Yeah, it was,
so well done. Someone else texts in and is quite unpleased with us, Danny, I think.
Okay.
They said, we're perpetuating the stereotypes that all sharks are dangerous by the hit the shark if it attacks you side conversations, saying we undid all the conservation discussion. But, you know, there's two sides to this. The conservation part is extremely important. But, I mean, if a shark attacks you or if a human attacks you or if anyone attacks you, it's interesting to find out the schools of thought on what you should do.
Yeah, it's dangerous anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, anyone, if you're under attack, it's dangerous.
Yeah.
But like I was saying to you, the two experts, one of them said you should attack the shark and the other one didn't. And, you know, I think that's fair enough to make that.
Yeah, it's where it came from, wasn't it? You've obviously saw two different experts' opinions on it. On how to deal with it, and many people find this stuff interesting, don't they? You always see these kind of TV programs on what to do if this happens to you, you know, like the grizzly bear attacks you, then what the advice is to play dead, that kind of thing. So
yeah, Michelle was talking about animals in Africa, it used to be very different advice depending on what the animals were.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those things, it's sort of something to be aware of, but we do realise that sharks don't attack usually, they usually want to mind their own business, and if you're in the water, they might confuse you for something else. So hope that answers your question. Right now, though, we're going to talk to William Denslow, he's in New York. William, how are you? Happy New Year, first of all.
Very happy New Year to you, Natalie and Danny.
Well, I have to say, I guess for you, you're battening down the hatches because there's a cyclone there. I saw somewhere that it was a rare bomb cyclone. This is something I'm completely unfamiliar with, Will. But looks like it's pretty cold and snowy where you are.
That's absolutely right. Of course, New York isn't too adverse to a little bit of snow every single year. A couple of years ago, New York had up to what was close to 30 inches of snow in a single evening, which was up there as record amounts of snowfall. Now, we're not expecting that level of snowfall here in New York. We're expecting around 5 to 8 inches. Now, New York is very well accustomed at handling that amount of snow. But you mentioned that this is a particular type of snowstorm. It's called a bomb cyclone or a bombogenesis, it's being described as. Now, what this exactly is that this is when a storm's barometric pressure drops by around 24 millibars in 24 hours. Now, the result of this has been described as something like a winter hurricane. And the result and the really troubling thing that's affecting thousands, millions of people on the east coast of the U.S., really from North Carolina up to Maine, even including parts of Florida, they're interestingly seeing their first snowfall in parts of Florida since 1989. What this means is it's bringing huge amounts of really incredibly strong winds up to 50 miles an hour here in New York. And that is a massive concern, considering the fact that there's real concerns that this could affect power lines, less so a concern in major cities like Boston and New York, but in more rural areas, especially as temperatures across parts of the Northeast expect to drop as low as minus 14 degrees Celsius, minus or around 7 degrees Fahrenheit over the weekend. So that is a major concern. The cold weather snap that's gripped major parts of the U.S. over the last 10 days or so, record lows over this period, has already claimed around 17 lives.
Quite remarkable there, William, the way that you mentioned that Florida, some parts of Florida, have seen their first snow in a very long time. I know you mentioned North Carolina there. That was one of the states that was impacted by many of the hurricanes over the summer months as well. What about preparations then to deal with the snowstorm across the eastern coast? How are they looking, the preparations?
Yeah, essentially, Danny, the National Weather Service is saying that travel from North Carolina up to Maine, so a huge stretch of the U.S. east coast, they're describing travel as very dangerous to impossible. So a really strong message coming from officials across the east coast of the country is to really stay indoors, to limit travel however much as possible, only go out and about if absolutely required. Schools in places like Boston, here in New York, public schools have been closed. Transportation still running here in New York, but with some delays because of the weather. So obviously the real issue being driven home is to exercise extreme caution, to really mitigate and minimize risk as much as possible. And really, message from officials as well, especially, as I say, in these rural areas that could be more at risk of power outages, in these more remote areas, check on neighbors, make sure everyone's doing okay, especially the elderly that are obviously more susceptible to colds and more vulnerable to being isolated in these extreme weather conditions.
And moving on to New York now, where unfortunately we've seen, you know, vehicle attacks happen like we have in other cities around the world. But authorities in the Big Apple, they're coming up with a plan to help to prevent this happening again in the future.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. This is a big initiative from New York's Mayor Bill de Blasio, and he's come out speaking in Times Square this week. He's essentially stated that the nature of terrorism does change, the nature of attacks does change. He says that what is needed is a more permanent solution. You mentioned these two attacks in 2017, one that killed 8 people on a bicycle pass on the West Side Highway here in Manhattan that killed eight people. There was another in Times Square itself in the springtime earlier last year that resulted in the death of one person. As you mentioned, these vehicle attacks that have been seen not only here in New York, but as you mentioned, elsewhere around the world, several high-profile attacks across Europe. Now, interestingly, after that West Side Highway attack, we saw a number of concrete bollards put up all over that bicycle path, over 50 of these bollards put up and down this kind of a few mile stretch that really passes down the length of much of Manhattan. So what essentially New York's mayor is doing is replacing these concrete barricades that have been placed not just on the west side but around all the busy tourist spots. So if you walk around Times Square at the moment, if you walk down Fifth Avenue, the famous shopping districts around the city, what they're seeing is these huge concrete blockades to stop vehicles being able to hit areas when large amounts of pedestrians do gather. These are being replaced by 1,500 steel security barriers. This is all part of a $50 million investment in New York security infrastructure. Of course, this comes just a few days after New York was gearing up for the New Year's Eve ball drop, where over 1 million people gathered in Times Square. And these barriers were very much front and center as a major part of their initiative and policy to keep that million or so people safe.
And William, I guess moving tack a little bit, Donald Trump seems to be in a bit of a tiz. This book has come out and there's lots of revelations in this book. And I guess as a response, Donald Trump has turned around and said his former ally, former friend, Steve Bannon, has completely lost his mind.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Incredibly strong words coming from the White House. The White House and President Trump saying that when he got fired, he not only lost his job, he lost his mind. So incredibly strong words there, Natalie. And another quote coming from President Trump saying that Steve Bannon was a staffer who worked for me. I'd already won the nomination by defeating 17 candidates that was described in President Trump's words, the strongest ever Republican Party, stating that essentially that Steve Bannon was less important to that as might have been previously just suggested, considering the fact that he was the president's chief strategist and really seen as his right-hand man in many ways. But of course, this all comes after this book that's been released. And in this book, Steve Bannon describes a meeting between President Trump's son, Donald Trump Jr., with some Russians in a meeting which was held in the summer of June, which was held in June 2016, describing it as a treasonous and unpatriotic meeting. Also, some incredible other revelations coming out, describing the Trump team as unprepared for the job, saying that the Trump team was shocked by their election win, saying that Melania Trump was the first lady in the U.S. as being in tears on the news that President Trump or Donald Trump then had beaten Hillary Clinton in the election. But of course, we have seen a slight backtracking since then. Steve Bannon's describing Trump as a great man in his radio show this week. But interestingly, the latest coming forward is that President Trump's lawyers now say they're looking into potential action going forward, saying that Steve Bannon may have violated a non-disclosure agreement and accusing him of defaming the president.
Now, William, we are running out of time, but I do want to quickly ask you about another story to do with Donald Trump, because the US president's former campaign manager, Paul Manafort, he's facing fraud charges, and he's now filed a civil action against the special counsel, Robert Mueller. This is all to do with the Russia probe. But what exactly is Manafort alleging here?
Yeah, essentially, Paul Manafort, the former campaign manager, essentially coming forward and saying that Robert Mueller's probe is going, simply put, too far. He says that the criminal case goes beyond Robert Mueller's remit, which is essentially looking at whether there was any collusion between the Trump team and the Russians and alleged meddling in the elections. What Mueller is saying that this is going too far, of course. What he's been charged, what these fraud charges relate to, isn't actually any dealings between the Russians, the Trump team, and any potential collusion. What this looks into fraudulent, alleged fraudulent payments from a pair of Ukrainian businessmen or a few Ukrainian business dealings in 2016. So that's why Paul Manafort is saying that the investigation is going too far and too deeply into his personal affairs.
Okay, William Denslow in New York. Thank you very much for joining us, and again, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Always a pleasure, guys.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.